Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Later this hour, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be here to answer your tree questions. But first, fall is in the air, but it's also a great time to think about the first blossoms of spring. Richard Geron is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And of course, this is a great time to think about planting our spring blooming bulbs, although I think a lot of us like to plant them at the very last minute, right before the snow flies. But this is a good time to be looking around. The lawn and garden centers are full of options. Richard, where do you like to start?
Local garden centers, but there are also companies that specialize in bulbs. You can go on the internet and actually they have photos. They have many, many varieties. And in fact, I was on one website this past week and they indicated they were not taking orders because for a few days because they were extremely busy. So quite a bit of demand for them.
Absolutely. And of course, Aaron, you're not just planting your own garden, but Ryman Gardens as well, and springtime is a big time for blossoms at Ryman Gardens.
It absolutely is. And all those bulbs, for the most part, one of the good reasons to talk about this now is if you are thinking about this, you may not plant them. October is usually a good time to plant them, but if you want to get, especially some of the more unusual ones, you have to get out there and purchase them before supplies are too limited.
All right. They do go fast. And I know we're going to think beyond tulips and daffodils, but let's start with tulips. Aaron, any advice for when we're making our selections?
Well, there are a wide variety of tulips. And many of the ones that we think of when we first say tulips are the large kind of hybrid types. An important thing to keep in mind about these tulips is that most of them are not great perennials. Many of them will be in our gardens for maybe a couple of years, maybe three or four, and look pretty decent, but they really fade away after a couple of years. And so it's not something the gardener's doing. It's just kind of part of how they operate, those large hybrid types. But there are also it's a huge group of plants, and there are a lot of really nice, maybe smaller bulbs, something that is maybe only a couple of inches high, that do make really great perennials that will be good long-term additions to your garden.
So how do you know?
Typically, the ones that you see at the big box stores and those types, the kind of the large hybrid types, are the ones that kind of fade away. The other ones that I'm referring to that make better perennials are usually referred to as species type. So if you ever see that kind of terminology used, those are the ones that tend to do better long-term in your garden.
All right. And now I know that at Ryman Gardens and on the Iowa State University campus and the other places that have big tulip displays, you actually remove the bulbs after they're done blooming in the spring. I will tell you that I've planted many tulips over the years. I have never removed bulbs. So I have kind of a hodgepodge of tulips, although I happen to like that look because some come back and some don't come back, or they, you know, there's quite the mixture. But do you recommend for people to dig up their bulbs when they're done blooming?
If you want a very nice, consistent, and good display, treating them like annuals planted in the fall can work. And that's what we do at the gardens. It allows us to make sure that we have a good, consistent display, because most of the tulips we are displaying here at the gardens are the big hybrid types, the really big, showy, colorful ones that people really love to see. And it also gives us an opportunity to do something new every year, which is one of the great things about using annuals. And so treating them like annuals is no different than treating a petunia or an impatient like an annual. You buy that every year. If we brought that in for the winter, it would live year to year. But instead, we decide to just move on with something else. And there's nothing nothing wrong with that. There's also nothing wrong with holding on to them as long as you can, and enjoying their blooms for as many years as they're around.
Well, and of course, in thinking about some of the public gardens that we see, we're thinking about these big displays. And Richard, most of us aren't going to buy hundreds of tulip bulbs to put in our yards. So do you have some advice for how to make a small planting look really beautiful?
Basically, put them in clusters or groups of one variety where you might have, let's say, 10 or 15 of a certain variety. I think they're more impressive that way when you have them in a clump like that. And basically, choose varieties that, you know, maybe reds, yellows, contrasting colors that really kind of stand out.
And you have kind of a rule about the number of tulip bulbs that you plant in one place too, don't you? Is there a rule about odds and even numbers?
Well, it's not so much that you just don't want to put them in a straight line, like a little soldier marking off to whatever. Put them in a group or cluster. So like 10 or 15, that really shows up quite nicely. Just don't put in one or two. Put them in big clusters.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about daffodils, and then let's talk about some of the other bulbs that we should be looking at. And Richard, I know you're particularly fond of daffodils.
I do, because they are true perennials. So if you choose a good site, basically a well-drained soil and full sun, and allow them to die back naturally, they will come back and bloom for many, many, many years, 10 or 15 years at least. Also, the rabbits and the deer will not eat them. They will devour tulips, in contrast. And there are many, many varieties. They're mainly whites and yellows and oranges. There are a few that are kind of pinkish. But you have trumpet daffodils, you have large cup daffodils, you have small cup daffodils, you have double daffodils, you have miniature daffodils. So they are quite diverse. And some of these mail order catalogs really have a wide selection of various types of daffodils.
And do you have advice on where to plant your daffodils? Because as you mentioned, you want them to die back naturally in the spring. So placement is pretty important if you don't want to really create a challenging mowing situation, right?
Yeah, you put them maybe at the edge where they can die back naturally, at the edge of a bed. And then later on, you can maybe put in some annuals. That works fine. The annuals will start out. Will get a good start as the daffodil foliage starts to basically die back. You can put them in with other perennials too, maybe mums or asters that don't really get off to a fast start. And as they die back, the mums and asters take over.
All right, let's talk about some of the other bulbs that we might want to think about planting. Aaron, what do you want to talk about?
Well, there are a large variety of bulbs beyond the tulip and the daffodil. And one of the groups that I'll talk about are what sometimes folks refer to as the minor bulbs. And these are the kind of the small little ones that pop up, usually relatively early in the spring. One of my favorite minor bulbs is winter aconite or aranthus. And it's this little yellow buttercup flower with a little green collar around it. Only a couple inches tall, and it's one of the very first things to come up in the spring, sometimes even through snow. And so it's always such a welcome sight in March when it blooms. Right next to that would be snowdrops, which are little white nodding bell-shaped flowers, also only a couple of inches tall. So both of these, you'll want to plant them because they're small. You want to make sure you plant them in large drifts of at least 25 or 50, and they're usually sold in larger quantities because the bulbs are smaller in size. Put them in a spot near the edge of a bed or near a place where you're going to see them in March and early April, because that's when they're in bloom.
And how do you plant that high a number of bulbs? I know that, when we think about planting bulbs, that's always a bit of a challenge. How do you do it?
Well, the smaller ones, like winter aconite or snowdrop or grape hyacinth is another nice one, squill or striped squill, all of these bulbs are pretty small. they only need to go down a couple of inches because they're not very big. And so, and because we're recommending that you plant them in clump, often the easiest thing to do is just to excavate the area that you want to plant them in, kind of like a broad, shallow hole, and then set them all out and backfill. So rather than planting them one at a time, dig out just a couple inches down the whole kind of swath or sweep or clump or drift or however you want to define it, and then place them all in, pointy side up, and then cover them back up and water them in.
All right, and I'm looking at pictures right now of the winter aconite, the Aranthus. It's just sweeps of it in woodland
yes.
settings. It looks really beautiful. I'm sure I yeah. couldn't plant that many bulbs. Richard, what are some of the
no.
other ones that you want us to think about?
Well, another one that we haven't mentioned yet would be just the typical hyacinths. They have the very, very fragrant flowers, and they're also very nice to force. Where you go ahead and pot them up, water them in, and then stick them in a cool place like the refrigerator, and you leave them there for 12 to 16 weeks. Then you take them out, and they'll bloom indoors, and in the middle of winter, you'll have these very fragrant, very attractive flowers inside.
All right. With about a minute left, Aaron, any others that you want to add to our list?
Well, related to hyacinth is Spanish bluebells, which is looks a little bit more like an elongated hyacinth. It's not as fragrant, but it blooms kind of April to May. And it's a nice something different to add in blues, mostly the color. And the last one I'll mention is actually a native, and it's Camassia or Camass. There are several different species, and it doesn't mind typically a little wetter soil. As a rule of thumb, bulbs want really well-drained soil. And wild camass or wild hyacinth, as it's sometimes called, can do better in heavier, wetter soils. And it's native, so it's a fun addition to the garden.
Oh, nice. All right, some new plants to think about that we may get to see bloom in the springtime. We are going to take a short break. We will be back to answer your questions in just a moment. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, are here. Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, will join us in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and joining us now, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And have you still been busy helping out with derecho cleanup?
Yes, ma'am.
That's
all
gonna
I can
go
say.
On for a long, long time.
Yeah. And I'm just now starting to get into some woodlands and stuff. So I'm really seeing the damage. And again, as I said before, there's areas where it really isn't that bad. But if you get into the core around Cedar Rapids, parts of Linn County, even to the west of Linn County, there's some areas that were hit really bad. And I've been into some timbers that we have a tough time even getting into. That's how many trees are on the ground, how much destruction there is.
Wow. Well, you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about trees, about any of the other plants in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're going to start with a tweet from Paul. Richard, Paul posted a picture on Twitter of his apple tree that started blooming again this week. He wants to know what's going on. What do you think?
Well, a number of woody plants have done that, and basically things like your fruit trees, your lilacs, the flower buds begin to form in early summer, and they're typically present by mid to late summer. But if the plants are under a lot of stress, let's say because of the weather, it's hot and dry, or they have a fungal leaf spot, and they have quite a bit of leaf drop, that puts them under tremendous pressure. And sometimes they kind of go semi-dormant. And then when the weather changes or the stress lessens, you get some rain, it gets cooler, and it will kind of coax some of the buds to go ahead and bloom. So they've kind of been tricked. So it's basically due to stress.
All right. And are there long-term consequences?
Not typically, no. But obviously, they're not going to bloom as much the following spring. But we've been seeing this, for example, on lilacs, quite a bit of lilacs this year, on crabapples, apples, that type of thing.
All right.
I've seen a few magnolias actually doing it, too.
Really?
Right.
Yes.
Huh.
That just sounds all very 2020 to me. Appropriate as we're living in the upside down. All right. Betty is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Betty.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. What's your question?
Yeah. We acquired this house in 1973 with lovely flower bed of peonies, white and pink, and also the dark. We are not gardeners, and we were busy, but we are retired now. They bloom every year, but we have not done anything to it, and I was wondering whether we should be cutting the body off or what should we be doing to be good owners of these peonies. And they bloom every year, but I notice they're getting thinner or something like that, but the blossoms are still beautiful. They are multi-petaled.
All right. I love peonies too, Betty. Aaron, what do you think? Do they need to be a little more active in their peony care?
I think the only thing I would ensure that you're doing is to, one, make sure that they're still getting full sun. Sometimes they'll, especially being in the garden that long, will transition to shade because other plants around them. So make sure they're still getting full sun. They're still blooming. There's not much more to do. After the first frost or after the first cold temperatures, when the foliage gets hit, cutting that off and kind of pulling it out of the garden area is beneficial for disease prevention. And so that's probably the most I would do at this point. If you do start to see a reduction in bloom, that's when you might take other stances. But peonies, as a rule, are long-lived, no-nonsense plants. It's one of the reasons why we like them so much.
So when do we cut the top?
It usually ends up being kind of mid to late October after the first frost.
Okay, late October. All right. We've never done that. We just keep on loving it because it blooms every year, like in June. Mm-hmm. They are in an open area. There is no shade or something.
Yeah, they do last a long time often, even without care. Betty, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Richard, we have this question. In the last couple of weeks, we've had large numbers of small white flying insects in the garden, eating leaves of many things and even ripe tomatoes. What are they? How big a problem do we have?
I'm not sure offhand. One thing that we have been seeing are white flies. Those are small, very fly-like insects, and they're fairly common, especially in dry weather. They have a piercing, sucking mouth part, so they don't eat actual plant tissue, but they suck sap from the tissue. And so that may cause maybe some yellowing of foliage, but usually it's not a big problem. And we tend to ignore them.
All right. We've got a question here for you, Mark, from Mark and Marion. I have a 5-year-old Royal Raindrops crabapple, beautiful tree, pink flowers with persistent red leaves, 3-inch diameter trunk. It was pushed over to the east about 20 degrees by the derecho. There's no branch damage. I've installed utility guy wires with rubber hose around those wires, which are attached to T-posts. I'm gradually tightening those wires to bring the trunk back to a near vertical position. I soaked the soil so there would be less stress on the roots from the pulling process. However, now I'm seeing vertical lines in the bark, not horizontal. They appear to be splits in the surface bark running from the ground upwards for several feet. I'm uncertain if these existed before the derecho. They seem to be healed now. Could it be the wind or the straightening process? And will the tree survive this?
Could be a combination of things. And most likely that tree will survive. Being a crabapple, they don't get as big. I think he can continue to experiment. The problem that you run into a lot of times, if that tree shifted and it truly wasn't the ball, sometimes the roots snap. And so when you bring it back, more roots break. And when, as you bring it back, you can get vertical cracking. The thing to have him watch for over time is if that vertical cracking is going to seal, he'll start to see callus tissue. Again, being a crab apple, they don't get as large. I think everything that he did, doing it slowly, watering it in, and guiding it is all he can really do. But he should start to see callus tissue on those cracks. If they're vertical cracks, though, a lot of times I don't think that's going to kill the tree. I think he has a chance. I think it's worth, you know, continuing to work with it, do what he did. The thing he might want to do over time is make sure he adjusts the straps so that the straps don't groove into wherever he has them attached. So move them around a little bit, try to loosen them when he can to give it a little movement. But I think he's doing all the right things.
All right. And he has a second question, too. He said, can I prune off the suckers on my pear tree now? It has no fruit. The great wind took them to Illinois.
Go ahead, Richard.
Absolutely. You can take off the suckers. Yes.
All right. My pears are gone as well. Many people lost pears in that terrible wind. All right. Let's go now to Heidi in Johnston. Hi, Heidi.
Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
I put preen down in my garden last weekend as I weeded it. And now that you guys are talking about bulbs, I'm wondering now, can I plant bulbs if I've already put preen on my garden?
Aaron?
Usually that wouldn't be too much of an issue. Preen typically basically prevents seeds from germinating. And a bulb is not a seed. It is part of the plant. And so I wouldn't expect to see much damage. It probably would have been better not to put it down potentially, but I don't think you'll run into an issue.
All right. And should she wait a little longer to plant? Or
certainly the longer you wait, the less it's going to affect it. And most of the time, planting bulbs in, the month of October is for bulb planting. September is when you acquire them. In October is when you plant them.
So, all right. Or Heidi, you can use my method.
Time to wait.
My method is wait until the snow is in the forecast and then freak out and plant them all right away. So.
Oh, and you have to do it in the middle of the night, right. Too, when you get home from work and it's dark.
Right.
Yeah.
It's best if it's dark. All right. Jason's on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Hi.
I have some trees that I'd like to put in the ground. They're nursery trees, and they've got a lot of circling roots on the root balls. My plan was to sort of cut about an inch or so off of the around the entire root ball to get rid of all of those circling roots. If I'm going to do that, is it better to do that now and plant them now, give them a few weeks to recover before they go dormant? Or should I wait for them to drop their leaves and go dormant and then cut the roots and plant them then?
I would go ahead and do it now, Jason. And I would box cut it, and you don't have to just go deep enough to basically what you want to cut is on all four sides. You just want to box it mm-hmm. with like a handsaw. That's how I would cut those and then go ahead and plant them. I mean, that's a really tough situation. There's been a lot of research done on those. It does set them back a little bit, but the alternative of that tree trying to grow with those encircling roots is basically impossible. And long term, that'll cause a lot of problems. So I would go ahead and do it now because you might even get a little more root initiation, but make sure you water them well. And when you water the pot area, the root ball, and don't worry about getting a lot of water outside of that root ball. Just basically treat it like you had it next to the house and you were trying to keep it moist. You want to water that root ball when you water.
Thanks. Yeah, we had a bunch of trees after we moved in that had been planted with, no root stuff, and they all strangled themselves after a couple of years. So I wanted to avoid that situation.
Well, the other thing that happens in those cases, they may not strangle themselves, but I've actually seen trees that were root bound when they were planted, and you come back 6 years later and you can actually still move that tree in the ground because those roots don't get a chance to spread out.
Yeah. Thanks.
The other thing to watch for, Jason, on that is before you plant, try to find what we call the root flare or the trunk collar, basically where the trunk meets those first major roots that come out, because sometimes in those pots, there may be a little extra soil. So you need to pull that soil away till you find those first main roots. Then that's what you measure for the depth of your hole. And you want that soil line to be just above or just at where that trunk collar is. So you don't plant them too deep. Okay.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Jason. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Richard, here's a question from Susan in Jewel. I planted green, orange, and red bell peppers this year. I only have one colored one turning orange so far. My son said that any green bell pepper will change color other than green if you let it stay on the vine long enough. Is that true?
That is true.
All right. So hang in there.
So hang in there, yes.
All right. Mark, Jackie is wondering if heritage oak is a good choice for eastern Iowa, specifically Williamsburg in Iowa County.
Heritage oak is one that's been planted, and it's a hybrid, and I believe it's a little more upright, and it's one that's been doing okay.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Martha's on the line in Washington County. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I live on a gravel road, and I have a long gravel driveway that runs from north to south, and then it curves around to the west, and we enter the backside of our house. And I want to know what kind of plants I could put on either side of the driveway, just following the edge of the driveway, and that would be, you know, easy to take care of and look nice.
All right. Do you have a kind of an idea in mind?
Not really. I don't want big bushes or anything, but just some colorful. If it's something that would bloom all summer, that'd be great.
All right. Aaron, do you have any ideas?
Well, I was going to recommend some woody plants, because a big long driveway would probably benefit from something with a little bit more stature to it so it doesn't get lost.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for something that blooms all summer that's really no nonsense, the first thing that comes to mind is daylily. As long as you have enough sun, they'll come in a lot of different colors. They're pretty easy to care for, pretty easy to plant. And tolerate a lot of conditions. And being next to a gravel road like that, they're going to be dusty, and they're going to be, the soil might be a little bit compacted, and daylily tends to deal with that pretty well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Martha. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. David is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have it was about a 7-inch tall serviceberry sapling that we planted in our backyard, and a rabbit came along, chewed off the top of it down to about an inch. That was 2 years ago, and this year we have two smaller stems appearing from the same bud. They're about inch and a half. I'm curious if we should nurture that and try to keep that growing, or if we should replace the serviceberry.
Richard, what do you think?
I would save it, and what I would do is get some hardware cloth and make a cylinder. It should be at least 2 foot tall, and place that over the plant, pin it to the ground so the rabbits can't reach it.
All right. Take some extreme steps to...
That's not extreme, but that should take care of it.
All right. A quick question, Aaron from Margaret in Shoeyville. Is it too late to direct sow my arugula seeds?
You could probably still get something out of that if you get them in the ground soon.
All right. And Richard, you want to try this one from Andrea. Can you force the tiny bulbs like snowdrops or the winter aconite?
I believe you can, but the ones that really do well are, for example, the grape hyacinths and the crocuses. They do really well forced.
All right. And Mark, let's see if we can do this one quickly. We lost our very large ash tree to the derecho. It was our main shade tree on the west side of our house. I was thinking of replacing it with a black gum tree. What do you think about black gum trees? Our hostas are roasting. I'm sure you're not alone.
I actually know people that have planted black gum, and I would say, I didn't hear where they were located, but I would say south of Interstate 80, places like that, black gum can be an alternative. Has a beautiful fall color.
All right. That sounds great. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more questions. You can call us 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Claudia's on the line next in Rock Island, Illinois. Hi, Claudia.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, I had a peach tree that was in the derecho, and it's only about 5 to 7 years old, and it didn't really ever have a very good root structure, so we were always kind of taking off peaches whenever we were lucky enough to get some. And the root ball was kind of up, and we then put it back down, staked it, and it seemed to be doing fine. I was able to harvest most of the peaches that were left on the tree. Amazing. And it's looking good. We watered it really well a couple times. I was just wondering if maybe we should put more dirt around the crown of it or give it some root hormone to stimulate the roots to grow in the fall.
Richard or Mark, which one of you wants that one?
Go ahead,
well,
Richard.
What I would do is, if it stays dry this fall, I would periodically water it until the ground freezes, maybe every week or 10 days. Do that. And maybe a little bit of fertilizer next spring, and that's basically it.
Okay. I mean, it looks really good. I mean, some tiny branches maybe broke, but otherwise the whole thing, because the week before that, I had forgotten the hose on it for about 5 hours. So maybe that helped save it. I don't know.
Well, it has been awfully dry, and maybe some of the roots were damaged in the storm, so some water would be beneficial.
All right, Claudia, thanks a lot for your call. Next, we'll go to Julie in St. Lucas. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I've had a couple of trees and shrubs look like they're slowly dying this summer. I have a viburnum bush. It's one of three that are in a row, and it's been... branches have just been slowly drying up their leaves and dropping off. And then I have a weeping birch that has been just looks like it's dying. The leaves are dying, turning brown and dropping off. And then the branches are actually dead if I do go break them off. And then also an ornamental river birch in the front yard that has the same issue going on. And I wondered, my guess is that I'm just going to have to take down both of the birches, but I really want to know about the viburnum, if it's something that is contagious to the other two bushes, and what I can do.
All right, should we start with the birches? And Mark, what do you think?
Sure. One thing that happened a lot this year is the birches about July were already starting to shed and drop yellow leaves, usually on the inner part, especially river birches, weeping birches, if they were in areas where the soil was a little drier. So a lot of times they'll turn yellow first, and then you can see more decline if things don't get better there. So it could have been some of the dryness. Again, not knowing the whole situation, but I know because of the drought situation that we were having in most places before we got to 5-6 inches of rain last week, there was a lot of trees that were in quite a bit of stress. So that's always one possibility. There's always other things, especially if it's more of a slow death. But if they're not green and you can scrape the branches and stuff and a large percentage of the branches are dead, then most likely removal is your best. But if there's still some green there and you've had some moisture, but we start getting dry and you can give them a little more moisture to see if they kind of come out of it, you could do that first before you make a final decision.
All right. And then on the viburnum, Richard, do you want to tackle that?
Well, I would suspect there might be an issue as far as the root system or possibly the base of the actual stems or canes. There is a viburnum borer that will bore into the base of some of these species, and they'll basically eventually girdle the stems, and they will slowly die. So I would suspect it might be that, possibly. There really is no treatment at this point. You may want to send some photos to the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State next spring if the symptoms appear again, and just take maybe 3 or 4 photos of the actual plant, including the actual leaves and maybe the entire plant, and send those to the clinic and see if they can determine the cause.
Okay. And the other two bushes, they're all three in a row, look just fine and unaffected. And actually the one that looks like it's dying, it has some like extra shoots that are coming up from the ground around it that are nice and green.
So then I would go out there and very carefully examine the base of the larger, older stems that appear to be dying and see if maybe you see some sawdust-like material or some areas that have been eaten away, possibly.
Also, Julie, look at what we call cankers.
I'll give it a look.
Yep, Julie, Mark's got an addition there.
Along with what Richard was saying, sometimes we can have different diseases that will cause shoot cankers. So along the stems where maybe it's dying, look down along those stems and look to see if the branches are sunken or discolored along those stems, because those could be indications of some kind of fungal canker. And those would be the same kind of things that you'd want to take pictures of if you saw that, if you sent samples or pictures to the clinic.
Okay. I had examined them pretty good. I was an agronomist in my former life.
Okay.
So I had looked at them over pretty good, and I wasn't seeing any visible, reason.
Okay.
So thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Julie, and good luck with that. Let's go to Judith and Spencer next. Hi, Judith.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have 6 spruce trees. It's a mix of Colorado and South Dakota spruces. They're about 40 years old. They're all in the line. The south side of the trees look really good, but the north side is it looks like it's dying. The leaves are falling off, and it looks like it has some kind of a fungus. The trees have kind of grown together, and what I'm wondering is, can I thin these trees? If I do thin them out, will the sides that where the trees grew in, will they fill back in, or am I better off, considering the age of the trees, to just pull them out of there?
So Judith, when you say thin, you mean actually take every other one out and remove them to open up the rest?
Correct.
Okay. So the first thing that you probably have is, being Colorado spruce, Black Hills spruce, if they're dying from the bottom, kind of going up and kind of dying on the inside coming out, there is there are a couple needle casts. One is called, and this will be on the spelling test tonight, Rhizosphera needle cast, and the other one is Stigmina. But if you go to the Iowa State Disease Clinic website, they have an encyclopedia, And if you click on the encyclopedia, you can go to Rhizosphera and Stigmina. And one of the things you can look yourself to see if there's at least one of those fungi there. If you look back on those branches and take some of the green needles still on some of those branches that are infected, and you look really close with a hand lens or magnifying lens, you'll find these little lines of black dots on the needles. And that tells you that there's actually fungi in the needles. It won't tell you which disease it is, but it'll at least tell you that those trees are infected. So you know what you're kind of dealing with. So if you have one of those fungi there, the thing is, they're just going to keep moving up over time. And there are spray treatments, but you're usually spraying every spring, a minimum of 2 times every spring, and you'd have to spray the whole tree. So you can sometimes prune that dead material up, or like you're talking about, if you took every other one out, the thing is, whatever basically is dead, Judith, is going to stay dead. So if you have holes, by taking those out, you're going to have holes. Sometimes you can prune that up and you're going to see the stem, but no matter what, because they're now coming together, the other thing that happens when those branches come together, they naturally shade each other out too. So it's not always fungi. It could be a multiple of things, but they will continue to do that. So you can kind of cut your losses and say, hey, I'll cut every other one out. I'll take what I have left and I'll work with those as long as I can. But even open those up, they're probably, if they're infected, they're going to stay infected, and you'll always have to deal with that disease either way.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. But and I had a tree man look at them, but I thought I better call and make sure before I pulled them out of there.
But you can... you can look yourself to at least tell if it's the fungi. If the fungi is not there, it could be some of just the natural shading going on there too.
Okay.
But generally, whatever's dead on those, they won't sprout back.
All right. Okay. Yep. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks a lot for your call, Judith. And now here's one for you, Aaron. Joe is on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a rose bush that I didn't cut it back 1 year, and it got the rose hips up on the top. And someone had told me, never cut those off. Just let it grow. Don't trim them back. So I didn't. And it's been probably, I'm going to say 5 or 6 years since I trimmed the bush. Now it's a 6-foot-tall spindly rose bush with foliage and flowers way at the very top. Is there anything I can do to trim that back without killing it?
Yeah, I mean, roses in general are actually pretty hardy shrubs. And so if you wanted to kind of reduce the size, in particular by removing some of the oldest branches near the base of the plant, if you can, I'm assuming that there are several, it's kind of like a lot of branches coming up out of the ground, correct?
Right. They're very tall and spindly with no foliage on them until you kind of get up to the top.
And so you can, it's obviously a very hardy rose. Most roses would see winter dieback. This one's obviously not doing that. So the best time to do that would be kind of late winter, early spring. Go in, remove maybe 2 or 3 of the oldest canes, and then see what you're left with. And then kind of gradually over the next couple of years, you're going to work to reduce that, because you don't want to remove more than about a third. If you want to be really aggressive, you could probably get away with a half, but I would lean towards a third of the plant at any given year. So it'll be a multi-year process to kind of get it a little bit shorter. And the hips are fine to stay on the plant. You can also deadhead, and then you won't get the hips. They're very ornamental, so that's nice to see. But sometimes when you deadhead, you can also get a little bit of rebloom, and sometimes we'd rather see more flowers. So it just depends on what your goals are.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll give it my best try here. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot for your call, Joe. All right, let's get through some email questions here from Susan. For you, Richard, I'd like to grow ranunculus in my cutting garden, but I'm not sure if it should be planted as a fall bulb or a spring bulb in zone 5, and if in the spring, when?
Spring. Basically, late April, early May.
All right. Mark from Chris, we have 4 maple trees providing shade for our south-facing deck. They are 29 years old, so we think we need to get new trees planted. What trees would work in shade now to eventually become our shade trees?
Well, it kind of depends how big they want those trees, but I would look at they're not going to get as big, but you could look at what we call hop hornbeam or hornbeam, also called ironwood and musselwood. They're kind of woodland trees, but people are starting to use them as shade trees. They're not, they're going to be more in that 25 to 35 foot range, but those would be two trees that, again, are not going to get full size, but could work in that situation.
All right, here's one for you, Aaron. What methods really work to prevent chipmunks from burrowing down and eating my newly planted tulip bulbs?
This can be really frustrating. Usually the best way to prevent this is to lay hardware cloth or chicken wire over the ground, pin it down. You can use a vinyl-coated one so it's green and it blends in really well. And that can really help digging from a variety of critters. Exclusion is usually the best way to deal with things like chipmunks, squirrels, rabbits, and those kinds of things. So that basically excludes them from digging.
All right. And then would you pull that out when the ground freezes, or when would you take that away?
Just as they're starting to emerge in the spring, I would pull it out. If they do emerge through that and they get too large, you're going to have to leave it in place because pulling it out will cause too much damage. So you're going to have to watch in the spring and get it up just as they're coming out of the ground. And then you can probably put it vertical with a few stakes to keep things from munching on the foliage.
All right. Here's a question for you, Richard, from Charlene in Marshalltown. I planted a packet of free eggplant seeds that actually grew and have several plum-sized eggplants on them. However, I'm noticing pinpoint holes in the leaves, so a bug of some sort is on the attack. What, if anything, can I treat it with and still consume any of the produce?
Flea beetle. They're very common on eggplant, and the plants can actually tolerate a certain amount of damage. I probably wouldn't worry about it.
All right. And here's a COVID-related question for you, Mark, from Mike in Cedar Rapids. He says, we haven't been able to have forestry field days with COVID. Do you know if the Master Woodland Manager Program will be offered again in the future post-COVID, or has the program been ended?
None of those programs have been ended. There's still a lot of hope, depending on what happens. But the hope is actually to bring the Master Woodland Program back. Yes.
All right. He also says, for the record, I miss the field days a lot and being able to meet with district foresters and all the other woodland owners around Iowa. Hey, we all miss a lot.
We all miss everything.
It's true. I miss having you guys in the studio for one thing. Mark Vitosh, thank you so much for being here today.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Aaron, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
We'll be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.